A few years ago, I checked off a life goal. I joined the annual Labor Day walk across the Mackinac Bridge. By dawn, thousands of us had gathered at the foot of the bridge. How does this work? Someone beside me asked. But I didn't know either, this being my first time. And then, far ahead of us, a man climbed a ladder with a bullhorn. Now we'll find out, said my fellow walker. And for the next 10 minutes, the bullhorn man explained. At least that's what I think he was doing, but I'm not sure, because the sound of the bullhorn was too weak to reach back into the crowd. Still, I was amazed at how people kept leaning forward, trying to hear. What's he saying? Asked my new friend, but I shrugged. And when he climbed down, most of us were still uninitiated. He had, however, covered the material. And I found that in the classroom, there's something secure about covering the curriculum. I like to map out a quarter to know that by the end I've taken students through the necessary lectures and texts, that I've stayed true to the syllabus, that I've taught the course. Only sometimes students don't seem to hear, like my meaning is too weak. They stare at me blankly or answer by rote without seeming to understand. I'm like the bullhorn man at the bridge, speaking, but not in ways my students can hear. I need to use their learning styles, their experiences, their skills to help them engage material, and not be so concerned with what comes out of my mouth. What matters most is what happens in students' brains, not what happens in mine. What counts is the meaning students uncover, not the meaning I cover. So what do you do when a class falls flat? When classes don't go well, we need to seek the multiple domains of learning. Learning goes beyond the cognitive brain, the thinking. Learning also involves the affective brain, the emotions, and the psychomotor brain, the actions. To fully engage students, we need to invite them to feel, to think, and to do. The affective domain is the feeling brain, the brain that processes emotion and values. Although I wish I didn't, I remember a moment from 60 years ago. Riding my tricycle, I came upon a cat killing a mouse. The cat's claws had already raked open the belly of the mouse, but the mouse was still alive, writhing. I saw gray fur laid back and blood smear the sidewalk, and I heard the frenzied screams of the mouse. With my chin on the tricycle handlebars, I watched the mouse die. Most moments from my third summer are lost, but I remember the dying mouse because emotion anchored the event into my long-term memory and still helps me access it all these decades later. People recall valleys and peaks, and teachers who remember this can increase retention in learning. So how can you infuse emotion into your teaching? Here are a few ways. Mourn. During a Holocaust unit, my students learned about Meep and geese. Meep hid and fed Anne Frank and her family for 2 years until the raid of their hiding place on August 4, 1944. I told students how Meep, who was still living at the time, commemorated August 4 each year. She withdrew from the world and reflected on the lost. Then I darkened the room, and we sat for 5 minutes thinking about the silence Anne Frank was forced to hold during her months of hiding. For the rest of the Holocaust unit, students were strongly attentive. And at a mid-August softball game, a group of students found me on the bleachers. On August 4, they told me, they had met at one of their homes for an hour of silence. The scriptures call us to mourn. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. In front of his disciples, Jesus wept for Lazarus and over Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. When Jesus mourned, he opened a way for his disciples to understand the kingdom. Tell stories. Story activates the brain, releasing hormones that stir us toward empathy and compassion. Educators call this mirroring. The pain of the story characters becomes our pain, their victories, our victories. When fact is linked with the emotion of a story, we remember. 75% of scripture is story. And Jesus told stories. The house on the rock, the little gate, the 10 silver coins, the precious pearl, the good stranger, the rich young ruler, the eye of the needle, and on, except Jesus' teaching didn't seem to go on. People listened. They followed him to hear. They listened even when they were hungry, even at political peril. Try surprise. The brain seeks what is novel, so bring the unexpected into your classroom. Bring objects to pique interest. Change your teaching textures. Invite guests. Interview students. Read aloud, show a video clip, make a riddle, provide manipulatives. Try changing your voice. Whisper, speed up, slow down, shout. Surprise makes absent students wonder what they've missed. You never knew what Jesus might do next. Send pigs plunging into a lake, pass through closed doors, walk on water, kill a tree, cook breakfast on the beach. Use the senses. Senses create strong memories. This is why advertisers care about color and music and make images so real we can almost taste and touch. When you teach the Book of Lamentations, play music in a minor key. A teacher who once taught in the room next to mine used light. She changed the bulb colors of a lamp to match the mood of the literature students were reading. The senses open a way deep into the brain. And Jesus opened the way to us with senses, with the incarnation. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. And as he taught, Jesus used the five senses to Thomas, touch my hands and my side, to the disciples, eat this bread in remembrance, to the crowds, look at the birds of the air. To teach, he used the fragrance of Mary's perfume and the stench of Lazarus' body. If you have ears, hear, Jesus said. Celebrate. A math teacher I once knew celebrated Pi Day each March 14. He found that after this day, students were more apt to remember that pi is a ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. Working with the formula was more memorable while singing pi songs, competing to remember the most pi digits, and of course, eating pie. Think about Jesus and celebration, singing angels at his birth, wine at a wedding, palm branches at his triumphal entry, and the upper room for a Passover meal. He invited the Old Testament prophets and the New Testament disciples to the Transfiguration. There Jesus' face shone like the sun, his clothes were white as light. There was a bright cloud and a voice from the cloud, and they saw him ascend before their very eyes. Make your teaching memorable. What stories can you tell? What can you mourn and celebrate? How can you surprise students? How can you use the senses? When you engage your students' emotions, they will learn more and remember longer. And when you stir their emotions, students are more ready to think. So to teach well, engage the affective domain, but also engage the cognitive domain, the thinking. To learn, students need to do more than listen. Remember that in teaching, what matters most is what happens in students' brains, not what comes out of your mouth. What counts is not what you cover, it's the meaning they uncover. And they won't uncover meaning without thinking. Even great material doesn't guarantee learning. Students, after all, remember only 5% of what they hear and 30% of what they see. It's when students interact that content sticks. Students remember 50% of what they discuss, 75% of what they do, and 90% of what they teach others. In a telling study, McDaniel and her team found that when teachers ask students to think, student learning increases. But here's the problem. You ask a question and everyone just sits there. That is, everyone except the two people who have answered every question you've asked all quarter, Sunday after Sunday. The longer I've taught, the less I throw a question out to the whole class and then wait for an answer. Here are two examples of how to involve all students in active thinking. Think and talk. Say to students, Take 1 minute to think. When the time is up, explain to your partner what you've learned so far about how Jethro intervened with Moses. This space for thinking gives introverts a chance to prepare for talking before extroverts jump in. When students think first and then talk with a partner, they master content. Pose a question. Have students work in small groups to make a list of questions they would like to ask Paul about the book of Philemon. After a few minutes, ask each group to select one of their questions to pose to the class. Student-posed questions often lead to lively discussion. The usual classroom practice is for teachers to ask questions and for students to answer. But when students pose questions, good things happen. Students become more curious, more engaged. They understand the relationship between two different things. They make meaning of important ideas and test new ideas. When students interact, they build bridges between what they knew before and the new knowledge they are analyzing. In the Gospels, people asked Jesus 183 questions. Jesus welcomed questions. When students pull concepts from their minds and interact with them, they are thinking, and these concepts are likely to stick. So, to teach well, reach into the affective domain and the cognitive domain, and also activate the psychomotor domain. To learn, students must do something, and they need to do what their brains are made to do. Let me tell you about my brother, Laban. My mom and dad just didn't know what to do about him. You can see him here in the front middle of the picture. I'm to his left, looking at him. Laban seems smart enough at home, drawing pictures, inventing new machines, telling funny stories, but his school grades were not good. Actually, they were bad. My parents didn't insist on all A's for every kid, but they did insist on us doing our best, and they could hardly believe Laban was doing his best. So they did what they had never done before, set a reward for good grades, lunch at McDonald's for those who made the quarter honor roll. This was big for us. Our dad was a poor preacher and McDonald's was popular then, even though we hardly ever went there. My brother, James, and I were sure that the two of us would get to go to McDonald's, but we knew Laban needed help. So we made him do his homework every night after supper, and we checked it, and we gave him practice spelling tests and drilled him on math facts. But Laban kept messing up. He left his homework in his bedroom or took it to school but didn't give it to his teacher. He daydreamed turning time math tests and drew pictures around the edges of his spelling paper, forgetting to write half the words the teacher called out. James and I tried, but at the end of the quarter, Laban didn't make the honor roll. So Laban stayed home with Mom while Dad took us to McDonald's. What should have been fun wasn't. I hadn't been a good teacher for Laban, I thought. My throat hurt when I swallowed a French fry. My brother sniffed as he drank his milkshake. Nobody felt like talking. We didn't know this then, but Laban would change in one summer, the one after his sophomore year in high school. That's when he started listening to four-part harmony quartet music with headphones and singing along with the bass. One evening, when Laban wasn't around, her parents talked to us. If any of you ever make fun of Laban for singing, if you even tell him you can hear him singing, they told us, you'll be in big trouble. So we didn't bother Laban, and the music seemed to set his mind straight. He remembered his chores and read more books. Back at school in the fall, he kept singing and his grades kept going up. Pablo Kaufman, a musician at our church, sat on the bench in front of Laban one Sunday and heard him sing. Pablo met with Laban to give him tips on singing. Laban finished high school with his head up and then shocked us all by going right to college and then to graduate school. Laban was the first person in our family to earn a PhD, and guess where we took him to celebrate? Here's a picture of Laban singing. He's second to the right, the guy with no tie who missed the memo about the dress code. Music activated Laban's brain. But music doesn't activate everyone's brains. Educational theorist Howard Gardner encourages us to provide students with multiple paths of learning. He believes there are multiple intelligences. Mostly in schools, Gardner says, we use only two of these intelligences, the verbal-linguistic pathway, people learning with words, and the logical-mathematical pathway, inviting students to reason. These are the happy students in many of our classes. They're asked to do things that fit their brains, use words, and reason. But many students are left frustrated. These are the students who learn better when they are talking with others, social intelligence. Touching, building, manipulating objects, using their bodies, kinesthetic intelligence. Finding and using rhythms, the rhythmic intelligence. Using or creating visuals, spatial intelligence. Reflecting quietly, personal intelligence. I once read through the Gospels to look for the answer to one question: how did Jesus teach? And I found that Jesus taught in all these ways. He invited people to do things in different ways. With rhythm, Jesus introduced the new kingdom. It has been said, and now I say, blessed are you, blessed are you, blessed are you, he said over and over. Look, Jesus often said, look at the child, at the birds, at the poor widow, at the lilies of the field, at the stones of the temple, at the fields white with harvest. Jesus invited people to reflect. Go into your closet, come away to a quiet place, stay and pray with me. If you have ears, Jesus said. Jesus told parables. If you can figure this out, he was implying, use your reason. Jesus gathered his followers around him into a social context, and they learned from each other as they discussed and squabbled and solved problems and jockeyed for position. And he set tasks before them, physical things to do: heal the sick, feed the hungry, find a coin in a fish, wash some feet, cast your net on the other side. And when people did these things, they learned. I finished my reading of the Gospels with a goal: to teach like Jesus, not like the bullhorn man at the Mackinac Bridge. I want to teach so students will learn.